You're listening to This Boy Elroy, episode number 33. Hello. Hey everybody, this is Adam, and you are listening to my podcast, This Boy Elroy. Okay, so I just wanted to get one more podcast in before Christmas. And because actually a lot of stuff has been going on with me that I want to put out there. So, first of all, I want to talk about in Dallas, actually, where at the university where Brad works at SMU, the faculty has gotten together, spearheaded by, I forget her name. I'm already like blanking on all of this. She's an associate professor, Suzanne Johnson, of Christian Education at SMU. She actually spearheaded this petition for the faculty to basically say, you know, we don't want the Bush Library here at SMU. So it's pretty cool. Brad signed it. I'm really excited. I just think it's so cool that that's happening. And also just kind of coming on the heels of the formation of that political action committee by some very prominent leaders in Dallas to stop the construction of new coal power plants here. I think it's pretty remarkable that this stuff is happening in Dallas, Texas. So I was just really, really excited about that. And I wanted to let everybody know that that's happening here in Dallas. And it's a very contemporary issue. And I will be bringing you more information as I get it and as I, you know, if it's something interesting, because I'm in a unique position here because my spouse, Brad, works at Southern Methodist University. So I'll be letting you know more about that as it unfolds. It's going to be very, very interesting, I'm sure, to say the least. I'm not quite certain that the Bush Library will be dissuaded from coming to SMU and Dallas, but it's definitely not going to be probably what they had initially wanted. So there's definitely a lot of opposition from the faculty at SMU. So, when I spoke to you last, but that night after I did the podcast, I was downstairs with Brad. We were hanging out watching television, and I just popped into my head that a potential issue could arise on Christmas Eve with his family coming over here. And I was kind of stressing out about it in the back of my mind. And at one point I almost went upstairs, got on the computer and did like an emergency podcast to kind of ask everybody's opinion about how we should handle this. But I think I've come to my or Brad and I have come to our own conclusion as to how we're going to handle this. But the background of the story is this. We're having Brad's, we've had Brad's parents here several times since we got our new condo for dinner and lunch, whatever. We're having Christmas Eve here at our condo this year, and his sister will be coming also with her family. His sister is religious, and I believe she goes to a Baptist church. And she, you know, she raises her daughters and, you know, and with Christianity and everything, but Brad was never raised Christian, and he was raised pretty much without religion. His parents aren't religious, and whenever that we get together with them, it's not all the time, but most of the time, she, you know, like leads in a prayer before eating. Grace, I guess, is what, I mean, most people call it grace, right? You say grace. And I mean, I don't even know if her husband is really religious either. I think it's just her. I mean, he goes along with it, like he does it, but I think he does it for her. I don't know if he truly believes or cares even. I don't know. I just think he does it for her. And it popped into my head, you know, when they come over here on Christmas Eve, you know, what are we going to do if she decides to say grace at our table? Because Brad and I are atheists. And my first sentiment on the situation was, I don't want to allow that in my house, because there's so much of that is foisted on me in the outside world, because it's considered, you know, quote, mainstream to be Christian and to believe in God. And I would feel violated if someone came into my home and started praying to Jesus or to God or whatever. So, and then Brad was like, you know, yeah, I know, I totally agree with you. And he had thought about it too. And he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, well, if she starts to say grace, I'll just interrupt her and say, no, no, we don't do that in this house. And I thought, okay, you know, that's fine. And I was particularly sensitive to it that day, because that day we had our potluck at work, our quote holiday party. And someone had asked another person to say grace, and she, you know, like, she's not even, I think maybe I talked about this in the previous podcast, but this person isn't even Christian, and she just doesn't even, I mean, she's from Taiwan, and I think she just thinks that's what American people do, is they just, they pray before they eat. Every time before they eat, they pray. I mean, she's not, she's very much so a scientist in the sense that she doesn't really understand interpersonal relationships. And plus the fact that I think because she's from Taiwan and she doesn't really probably have a grasp on you know, like U.S. culture, she probably just thinks, oh, everybody prays before we eat, because the perception from a foreigner, and I've spoken to the European people about this, and they perceive Americans as constantly praying. We pray before we do everything to them. I mean, the way they see it, we're constantly praying, and they think it's weird, and I think it's weird too. So where was I? So Brad and I decided, and I was really, really sensitive to that day. And I was like, oh God, you know, she's going to pray. And it's like, you know, I don't want that in my house. You know, like, I don't believe in that stuff. And, you know, she needs to respect, you know, our customs when she's in our house and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. Part of this also is that, you know, we're on the defensive because when we first moved here, Brad and his sister, they kind of, you know, he made an effort to go out to lunch with her and everything. And he wanted to try to get to know her because he's also very far in age from her, the same way that I am from my closest sibling. I think it's the same situation. She's 14 years older than he is. And he wanted to, you know, now that they live in the same city, he wanted to take that opportunity to get to know her better. So we started going out to lunch with her. And then the last lunch that he ever went out on, whenever went out with her, she gave him a Bible, you know? And I think this was after he had told her that he was an atheist. And, you know, he was just like, what the hell is this, you know? you know, and it was, I don't know, how do you take that? I mean, you know, especially when you're gay, it's, I mean, is it, do you really want me to know Jesus because you really find it enriching, or are you judging me because you think the way I live my life is wrong, or are you just doing this because you want to put some kind of spiritual money in the bank and say that you saved a person so that when you go to heaven, you'll have a nice apartment in the clouds or something? I mean, I don't know. That's a whole other story. But anyway, I slept on it. The whole decision of whether or not to allow this. And the next morning I woke up and it was still on my mind. Very much so on my mind. And I was in the shower and I was just thinking and I was like, you know, is this right? Is that the right thing to do? And in the back of my mind, I was thinking about Gay Prof and his post on queer villains and about how conservatives and that about how I talked about that passage in his post about how conservatives can manipulate liberal minded people or free thinking people into allowing them to voice their crap for the sake of having a balanced discussion. And I was thinking, is that what I'm doing? I mean, am I questioning my decision to restrict her prayer at my house? Am I being too open? Would I be too open to allow it? You know what I'm saying? Like, if I allow it, am I being too open-minded and not being hard enough on her and saying, no, you don't do this in this house? And I came to the conclusion, and I was thinking about it more throughout the day, thinking about it. And I came to the conclusion that it's not right to restrict that. It's not what I want in my home, but it's not right to restrict someone from doing that. Because they should be able to express whatever it is they want to express. I'm all for people being able to express themselves in a peaceful manner, even if it, you know, I don't know. She's never done anything to us, and it's unfortunate that these other wacko Christian freaks have made such a bad name for Christians to the point where I am so afraid of them and I don't want anything to do with them, because immediately I think if you're Christian, you want to nail me to a cross and burn me because I'm gay. And I can't help but think that. And I think I have good reason to feel that way, given what's happened in this country in the past few years with Defense of Marriage Acts and et cetera, so forth and so on. And that's unfortunate. But Brad's sister has never done anything like that. She's never said anything. She's never made any kind of hint. In fact, it's been quite the contrary. She's been her husband and her daughters have been nothing but nice to us. They've been extremely generous to us around the holidays and whatever. I mean, like, and, you know, and last year when we went to their house for Christmas, I was so nervous because her husband's family was going to be there. And but they were, I mean, it was so comfortable, and I found that my worries were completely ridiculous, and I was able to have a really good time. And so I came to the conclusion that it's not right to restrict that. And there's a very good chance that it won't even happen also, that she won't even do that. And it's difficult when you're an atheist, because when you're an atheist, there is no faith and there is no expression of a faith. So when you believe in a God or you believe in whatever, a savior, you pray to that God and you pray to that savior, and that's an expression of your faith. You're showing your faith. But when you're atheist, there's nothing. There's nothing that you can do to express your atheism, you know? And I kind of felt like, well, if she's going to pray, I want to be able to do something. That's what I boiled it down to in my mind. It's like, well, if she's going to pray, then I want to be able to show my atheism. And I think that was the reason for my initial, no, you can't do that. But what I'm going to do instead is, as an atheist, you know, people of faith pray, and as an atheist, I don't. It's not an opposite of, it's an absence of, for atheism. So you pray and I have the absence of prayer. I'm not going to do the opposite of a prayer. I'm not going to do like a counter prayer. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just not pray. So that's the conclusion I came to. It was weighing on my mind really heavily, and I finally decided that it's not right to restrict that, because if I restrict her, then if we restrict her, then we give her license to restrict us in the future. And I'm not saying that she would do that, but I'm saying that you give someone license to do that. You restrict someone, and then you give them license to restrict you. She's never done anything to us to warrant that. And now if she comes into the house with her family and they're wearing, you know, bizarre robes and holding super soakers filled with holy water, and they're spraying the walls and everything we own, and shoving crucifixes in our face and saying, you're living in sin, you must change your ways, then I'm going to say, get the hell out of my house and take your hocus pocus elsewhere. But she's not going to do that. That's the thing. She's just... But I tend to get carried away in my mind. I have a highly active imagination. So, yeah. What else? I've been doing all this reading about Christmas, you know, because Christmas is coming up. And there's this whole, you know, in the news, the war on Christmas. You know, I'm an atheist, like I said, but I still celebrate Christmas. And I think in the news lately, someone asked Richard Dawkins about whether or not he celebrates Christmas. You know, he just published this book, The God Delusion, a whole book about why there probably is no God. And, you know, Christmas is a secular holiday. You know, I realize that more and more every year. And even on reflection, I think about as a child, it was never a religious holiday for me, and the religiosity of it, even when I was raised Catholic, was always just kind of an afterthought. It was, let's open our presents in the morning and we're having all this fun, and then it was like, oh man, I gotta go to church because Jesus was born. Fuck, you know? So it was always just kind of an afterthought and something that got in the way. And my mom always had like this silly little tradition for me. We had this ceramic nativity set that my grandmother made. It was kind of nice, actually. It was just white ceramic glazed. And the baby Jesus was separate out of the manger. And the whole thing was ceramic. The manger was ceramic, and the baby Jesus was like this little ceramic amorphous baby. And we couldn't open presents until I put the baby Jesus in the manger. But to me, that was like, I had no religious attachment to that whatsoever. I didn't care. I thought I saw the baby Jesus going into the manger as a key in a lock that opens the door to the presence. So I was like, great, yay, okay, let's open the presence now. Jesus is in his manger crying. Yeah. So, and it's so funny. There's all these people, they're like, oh, Christmas trees shouldn't be in public places and blah, 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 blah. Stupid, stupid, stupid. The whole concept of a Christmas tree, and if, for those of you that don't know this, you should go read up about it because it's very, very fascinating. And I've been reading up about it a lot this week. Christmas trees actually are part of a Germanic tribal tradition from way back in ancient times, and it even goes back to the Druids. The Druids thought that the Christmas trees possessed some kind of amazing power because they didn't die in the winter. They saw them as everlasting life, and they worshipped these trees, and they even would decorate them. There's even some historical records to show that the Druids would attach candles and put fruit in the trees at the time of the winter solstice to celebrate the everlasting life and to celebrate the fact that there will be life again in the spring, and this tree represents that. And so it's really interesting when you read about the origin of the Christmas tree, and even the origins of Christmas itself is steeped in ancient Roman tradition and the Druid, and it's really a solstice festival, a winter solstice festival, end of the harvest, kind of let's have a retrospective of the year. Everyone did a nice hard, you know, everyone did really hard work this year, let's congratulate ourselves and give each other gifts. And the Roman holiday is called Saturnalia, worshiping the god of Saturn, who is the Roman god of the harvest, I believe, in my reading. And if you read about Saturnalia in ancient Rome, you will see that it was commonplace for the ancient Romans to bring into their home evergreen boughs and garlands and decorate them and also give each other gifts of gold and silver. So it's really interesting when you read about how you read about these ancient celebrations of the winter solstice, and you're reading about Christmas, really. So, yeah. That's why I think this whole thing about Christmas trees being in public places is ridiculous. You hear these news stories, oh, take down the Christmas tree. It shouldn't. It's a separation of church and state. Christmas is a secular holiday. Even when I was like, because I was very much very, very Catholic at one point in my life. You know, I went through all the confirmation and everything. And even when I was fervently Catholic, Christmas was not the big holiday. It was not the holiest of days. Easter was the holiest of days. And, you know, Christmas was just kind of like a happy fun time, you know? So it's a secular holiday. All right. I've gone on long enough, I believe. And I just want to, because I don't think I'll be podcasting again before Christmas, I want to wish each and every one of you, my listeners, my readers, and my blog, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I hope you've all had a wonderful year. And if not, I hope that you will be having a nice new year. And so I just wanted to say that to all of you. And I think that's it. I thought I had something really touching to say, but I don't. I'm just going to leave you with one of my favorite Christmas songs from my favorite Christmas album, the Muppet Christmas album. I love it, with John Denver. And it's We Wish You a Merry Christmas. And I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I will talk to you all later. Have a nice holiday, everybody. Take care.
Okay, everybody.
We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Now bring us a figgy pudding, now
figgy
bring
pudding!
No, figgy pudding, it's made with figs.
Oh, sorry.
And bacon.
What?
We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
We won't go
until we get some. We won't go until we get some. We won't go until we get some. Hoping some out here. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.